A judge could issue an injunction early next week.
Fox Radio's Evan Brown from America's Newsroom. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and let me ask you a question right here at the top of the program. Is pluralism better than secularism? You know, those might be two terms that maybe you're not fully aware of or fully have a good working definition of those terms. But think about it. You know, the idea of pluralism, the way we think of it in our society today, that number of people, everybody has their own idea about what is right and what is wrong. And all of those ideas are all brought together into the public square. Is that better than what we know to be secularism in our society today? Specifically, you know, as we approach the holiday season, this idea of secularism seems to pop up in the news, and it seems to pop up on a lot of Christian blogs as we talk about, wait a second, you know, what's going on here? We can no longer say Merry Christmas. A lot of store owners instruct their employees not to use terms like that because they say that, those are Christian terms and we don't want to be on one side of this debate versus the other. And so we want you to use a more secular term, maybe Happy Holidays or something along those lines. Of course, we have heard this discussion about secularism versus, you know, the Christian point of view on things in our debates that take place about politics. Just about every day that you turn on your television, you know, there'll be some sort of new debate taking place in the political realm. Of course, we got a lot going on right now with the healthcare debate and things that are taking place there. Well, when we come from a Christian perspective and we say that things are right or wrong based upon a Christian worldview, we often hear from the people round about us that, hold on a second, you can't inject religious views into this discussion, that it would be far better to have a quote-unquote secular point of view about these things, something that is put forth as being more neutral in the situation, and therefore the Christian view is often silenced or at least marginalized in the debates that take place today. These are the types of subjects that we're going to talk about, and I'm going to do so in the context of a book. And the book is entitled The End of Secularism. It's written by Dr. Hunter Baker. He's a Christian academic and writer specializing in religion, politics, history, and culture. Now, that's what we need, a subject matter expert in those areas in order to understand this debate. Now, Baker also serves as a political science on the faculty at Houston Baptist University. And he has written for a wide variety of publications, including The American Spectator, the National Review Online, Christianity Today, and the Journal of Law and Religion. With that, let me go ahead and welcome in Dr. Hunter Baker to the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Well, good to have you. I hope that you can separate all of these different items that are included in this discussion here today. Hunter and I were talking briefly just before the broadcast, and I was making my plea for that we try to keep this as simplistic as possible to start with anyways, even though some of these things are a little bit more complex arguments that we're going to be talking about. With that in mind, Dr. Baker, if we could, how about just giving us a good working definition of secularism And then secondly, we should probably also define pluralism. Would you do that, please?
Sure, I will. You know, the word secular long ago had a very useful meaning to it. Unfortunately, we have abandoned that meaning. The old meaning of the word secular was in the world, something that happens in the world. And so, for instance, the Catholic Church, you know, you'd have people refer to secular clergy. These are not clergy who don't care about God. It's secular clergy as opposed to, say, a cloistered nun, you know, who would never come out into the world. And so that was the old meaning, you know, secular, something that happens in the world, as opposed to maybe something that happens in heaven, you know, or in isolation. But the way we use the word now is basically to refer to life together in the community without God. That for the sake of dealing with religious difference, we pretend as though God does not exist. We do not talk about God in public affairs, you know, if you're a good secularist. And we basically, religion is fine as long as it's private. You know, religion should be confined to your church or your home. It should not be brought out into the community. That is basically the viewpoint of secularism.
And how about pluralism in that in our discussion as well? Does that also has the meaning changed to that word over time?
No, pluralism. Pluralism is a more recent word, and what pluralism means is simply, I think you defined it fairly well. It's the idea that different types of people with different ideas are able to coexist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is actually part of the reason we developed, at least originally, a very healthy sort of approach to church and state in America, as opposed to how it had been in Europe. Is because in America you started to see pluralism. You started to see different people coming to America seeking religious freedom. And, you know, they all wanted everything to be sort of their own way. But over time, they kind of learned how to coexist. And American Christianity thrived as a result.
Maybe there's one other word that we really should define a little bit as well that's associated with these thoughts, and that's the idea of tolerance. Tolerance, of course, having the idea, you correct me or build upon this if you would, please, but the idea that, you know, everybody is entitled to their idea, but that seems to have morphed a bit during our time to the idea that all ideas are equally valid and are equally true, which is, of course, absurd.
Yeah, you're right. The word tolerance has been kind of twisted out of shape. You know, the old word, we used to talk about religious toleration. And for instance, you know, we often wish that Muslims in the Middle East would embrace religious toleration. You know, that they would tolerate the existence of different faiths in their midst, that if one of their children were to convert, that it would not be, you know, grounds for execution or something like that. That's religious toleration. It doesn't mean that you give up your faith. It means that you are willing to allow other people who have different faiths to have rights and freedoms. That's tolerance. That's toleration. But you're correct. We have morphed tolerance into this idea that we may not insist on the truth of any particular proposition, and you really can't live that way. It is in my mind, it's a recipe for cultural suicide. There's a wonderful Christian writer, he was also an academic in the mid 20th century, named Elton Trueblood. And he had what I think is a fantastic idea. He used to talk about cut flower civilization. And what that metaphor meant was, you know, if we've all done it, you know, you take a flower out of the garden, you cut it, or you buy cut flowers, and you take them home and you put them in the vase, and they look beautiful. You know, they continue to look as good as they did in the garden for a little while. But then they begin to rot, they begin to decay, and you have to throw it out. And that's that's what happens with our culture. If we break our culture off from its sources, and the Christian faith is absolutely a massive, massive source of our culture. If we cut ourselves off from the source, then our society is destined for decay and ruin.
Mm. And one of the words that, and we're just laying the groundwork here for our discussion that we're going to have when we come back from the first break, but one of the words, of course, that, and you brought this up, in the idea of the Islamic world, the opposite of tolerance there would be coercion, you know,
absolutely.
That by a threat of removing your head. In the Islamic world, they will, you know, try through coercion, through threatening, through intimidation to win people over to their side. And unfortunately, if we don't think through this biblically, if we don't think through this whole subject of tolerance and absolute truth and the role that we play in society, some of us could end up in more of a coercion type of, dynamic there, or a paradigm, without realizing that we've come into that type of a worldview. Do you agree?
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, the interesting thing is, we talked about the Muslims. There have been other types of terrible coercion actually propagated by secularists.
Mm.
Think about the old Soviet Union. Think about Chairman Mao's China.
Sure.
You know, these, or for that matter, Hitler's Germany. These are regimes that had their own sort of comprehensive viewpoint, ideology. And they were willing to kill anyone who disagreed.
Mm.
So it's not, you know, they like to act as though religious people are the only ones who do this.
Yeah.
The secular totalitarian regimes are by far the worst in history.
Right. You know, they often point to the Crusades as being the example of, you know, religious intolerance. But
right.
They dwarf in comparison to the millions upon millions that were killed by those secularist regimes that you were just talking about. We'll come back to this in just a couple of minutes. When we come back from the break, we're going to delve down into this subject much more deeply here to look at the idea of God in the public square. How should he be presented by Christians in the public square? It's a very interesting discussion, and you're invited to join the conversation. 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Wall Street went into a free fall.
The biggest one-day drop ever.
We live in times of financial insecurity.
The financial crisis, meanwhile, continued to spread.
But no matter what you're facing, you don't have to face it alone. We're a radio station made of real people with real-life struggles just like you. We're here because we've found security in tough times. We offer teaching and talk to point people toward eternal strength found only in God. And it's your support of our ministries that gives people this good news in insecure times. Thanks for telling your friends about Christian Talk 660.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Speedy D's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Speedy D's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Speedy D's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Speedy D's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
In the world would steal from a handicapped lady? Well, this is Johnny, and it happened to me as I recently entered an elevator. Two men stepped in behind me, and one of the fellows bumped my wheelchair. When I turned to give him room, they jumped out just as the elevator doors were closing. When we arrived at our floor, we saw that my wallet was gone from my purse, which was on the back of my wheelchair. We called security, canceled my credit card, met with the police, but there was no retrieving my wallet. As we got ready for bed that night, our reading included this verse from Isaiah. There is no peace, says the Lord, for the wicked. Ho, ho, ho! So we started praying for those wicked men who robbed me. We asked God to give them no peace until they came across some Christian who would introduce them to the Prince of Peace. Hey, if you've been wrong today, this is a good way to pray for the wicked in your world.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. I wanted to let you know very quickly as we're heading out to break, I told you about how you can participate in the radio program today. One of the best ways is via the phone. You can call. It's a toll-free number. And so anywhere in the country and even outside the country, we've had people call from the UK and Brazil and so forth. So you can use this number. It's 1-888-660-WLFJ. Let me spell that out for you a little bit better. In the actual numeric form, it's 1-888-660-9535. You're welcome and encouraged to join in our conversation today. Also, I have Twitter up and running. The Twitter account is Knowing the Truth. And then I also have email up and running as well. And that email account is very simple URL for you to use there, or email account. And it's just simply Kevin, K-E-V-I-N, at knowingthetruth.org. And so you can send me an email. And in any of those ways, I will get you into conversation here one way or the other into our discussion. By the way, I do have copies of this book to give away today. Very interesting study. We're just going to be able to whet your appetite for this topic during the broadcast here today. I recommend that you get the book and that you read through this. This is very important that we formulate a correct biblical Christian worldview on these important subjects. And so I want to put one of these books in your hand. You can get one absolutely free for just your participation in the program today. It's put out by Crossway. It's www.crossway.org. And so I've got some of their books to give away. I'd be happy to have one mailed to you if you participate in the program today. Okay, let's go back to our discussion with Dr. Baker. Hunter Baker is my special guest today, and we're talking about his book, The End of Secularism. And Dr. Baker, I noticed that the Washington Times did a recent review of your book. And here's a couple of the things that they say here in the book. The second paragraph in their review says this: in this slim but compelling volume, Mr. Baker argues that this is precisely what secularism asks of us, to hold our abstract religious beliefs in private, but live as if there is no God in our public lives together. Religion then becomes, and it gives an example here. This is not my example, but I think it may be fitting. It says that it becomes like sex in the Victoria era, something best done in private but seldom discussed. And so they say that, you know, here is secularism is trying to push the subject of religion into that type of a corner, very private, marginalize it. Is that the main thrust of your book, to get that story out?
Well, certainly, you know, what I'm trying to do with the book is to be skeptical about secularism and see whether secularism can stand up to somebody being skeptical about it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a tried and true method. I have a friend who was a missionary to Russia shortly after the Soviet Union collapsed, and then also to France, and you know, both fairly skeptical societies. And I said, how do you do that? How do you witness to people like that? And he said, you know, I used to just kind of put my own beliefs out there and let them take a lot of pot shots at it, but I found something more effective, which is I ask them what they believe, and then I just act all skeptical about it. And then they have to kind of go through the exercise of trying to convince me. And often in the course, when they try to convince me about what they believe, they suddenly realize that the foundation for what they believe is not nearly as strong as what they thought it was. And I am essentially trying to do that with this book. You know, there are many scholars in the academy who like to focus on religion, and they spend all their time trying to tear religion apart and deconstruct Christianity and things of that nature. And I sort of decided to be a scholar of secularism. So So I'll be the guy who works on that.
So the secularist is trying to paint secularism as a neutral
yes.
theory or a neutral way of handling public debate. Is that
yes.
correct?
That's exactly right. I mean, if the meaning of the book's title, The End of Secularism, you know, people ask me, well, are you predicting the end of people who are secularists? And that's not really it. What I'm predicting is the end of the believability of secularism as a neutral public philosophy. That we are no longer going to, because I think that many well-meaning Christians have accepted this idea.
Right.
That, you know, well, not everybody's a Christian, so I probably shouldn't talk about my faith in front of other people. I probably shouldn't apply my Christian faith to the way I vote or the way I argue about public affairs, because that's just impolite.
Mm-hmm.
But if secularism is not really neutral, and I spend a fair amount of time in the book attempting to demonstrate just that, and it is not. Let me go ahead and
yeah.
break the plot. If not,
give us one example of why you say, like you say, you lay out the argument in the book, and I've read it.
Yeah,
and I've seen those. But give us what you would consider the best argument for the fact that secularism is not neutral.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I could give you a few, but one comes from what you just read. You know, you talked about for the secularist, religion is like sex in the Victorian era.
Mm.
I spent the first half of my life as sort of what I would say is a secularist. You know, I grew up in a town that Pensacola, Florida, that had a fairly vigorous Christian population, and a Bible college, and there'd be people preaching on the streets sometimes and things like that. And I people say the gospel is a scandal. I was offended, you know, as a person who was sort of a secular-minded person. I was offended when people talked about God and sort of embarrassed. You know, it just seemed like they shouldn't be talking about that. To me, it was like they were talking about, you know, either their sex life or their bathroom habits. You know, they shouldn't be talking about it.
Mm.
That's private, right? And so what happens is you have people who are secularists, and they're more comfortable if we just don't bring up this whole God thing. But what that means is that if we arrange the society around their preferences, that's not neutral. You know, you are denying who you are and what you believe in order not to scandalize this other person. And that there's no neutrality to that. And, of course, you know, we know that we're charged to proclaim the gospel.
That's right.
And you know, that how it applies to all of life. You know, that if we don't, even the stones will cry out. You know,
mm-hmm.
So we're ultimately denying our faith altogether if we buy into this sort of view of secularism. But also, you know, there have been some wonderful work showing that there is a group of people who are secularists. They have particular preferences, particular political preferences. You know, they tend to vote Democrat. They tend to be left-wing. They tend to have a very low view of Christians. And again, I mean, their philosophy of life is anything but neutral.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be fairly anti-Christian.
Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out, not only do they make those views known then, so they're not being neutral in the situation at all, but Christians, because we haven't really thought through this and really saw through the smokescreen of this false neutrality that is promoted by them, it does often work to intimidate us, silence us, and at least marginalize what we have to say because we haven't been taught properly about the separation between church and state and these types of concepts that we're talking about today.
That's right. Well, and we also don't have a very good grip on our faith. For many people, their faith is sort of something they choose subjectively. It's heart religion. It makes their heart feel good. It's emotional. But the Christian faith is a faith that makes public claims about history. There's a powerful intellectual component to the Christian faith. It's not just about whether it makes you feel good or not, or whether it works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, R.C. Sproul has written quite a bit about that, and of course that it's we have a reasonable faith. It does, you know, we do engage our mind. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, mind is included in there as well. And, of course, throughout the scriptures it says think on these things. It's constantly telling us, renewing your mind is the program that R.C. has there,
That's right, of course,
and talking about that we need to change our way of thinking on these things. So I think you're absolutely right that a lot of Christians have bought into just some sort of a sappy, emotional, feel-good religion and really haven't thought through these things on a biblical basis. I also note, and you note this in your book, and I've noted this before on the broadcast as well, and maybe we could talk about this when we come back from the second break, but you note that the secularist will borrow capital from religious things. In other words, they don't remain completely neutral. Some of the terminology that they're using, wait a second, we've heard this somewhere before,
That's exactly right. We've heard this
in Christian circles and in Christian debate. That's where I want to go when we come back from the break.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling.
There we go. We started off right away. We'll be back in a minute.
Today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Here's Dr. R.C. Sproul, respected pastor, author, and founder of Ligonier Ministries.
One of my favorite interviewers is Pastor Kevin Bowling, who hosts Knowing the Truth radio program out of Greenville, South Carolina. This is a terrific program, and I strongly recommend that you give your serious attention to it.
Hear Pastor Kevin Bowling on Knowing the Truth, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock on Christian Talk 660 and online at knowingthetruth.org.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Speedy B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Speedy B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Speedy B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Speedy B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
This is John MacArthur inviting you to join me for Portraits of Grace. One of the great privileges we have as believers is to suffer for Christ. That certainly was Moses' perspective. In spite of living 1,500 years before Christ, Moses considered the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the true reward. You see, Moses decided to turn his back on Pharaoh's household and identify with God's suffering people because he knew that suffering for Christ was far better than enjoying the riches of Egypt. And as long as you are living a godly life, there will come a time when you will be persecuted for Christ's sake, so be prepared. When that time comes, follow Moses' example of faith and courage, knowing that God will be your shield and your reward. This is John MacArthur, trusting your lives are portraits of grace.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast today. Again, you're welcome to participate in our conversation about secularism, about Christian worldview, and thinking through these issues about what we have to say in the marketplace of ideas, in the public square, that our view, which of course is based upon the scriptures, is just as valid as any other view that's there, and we shouldn't be intimidated by the folks that are there saying that, well, your view, because it's based upon a religious book, i.e. the Bible, that it's not valid and you shouldn't be allowed to say anything within the public square. That's just not true. It's not true at all. And as we'll be talking to Hunter Baker here in just a second, not only is it not true that shouldn't be allowed to articulate our view, even though it comes from a perspective that is based upon the Bible, but it's not true that secularism is completely neutral. They've got an agenda. They've got a view, if you will, that they're trying to put forth as well. In fact, they're not even completely void of any religious type ideas. Those things are built in to some of the arguments that they made. They can't escape it, basically. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Let me just give you a quick program note. Next week on the radio broadcast, right here on Christian Talk 660, on Tuesday, Dr. Albert Moeller will be with me again on the program, and we're going to be talking about a great subject, one of the subjects that I love, that's near and dear to my heart. We're going to be talking about the Ten Commandments. Specifically, Dr. Moeller has written a book called Words from the Fire, Hearing the Voice of God in the Ten Commandments. To hear a lot of people talk these days, and unfortunately, even some Christians, you would think that the Ten Commandments are now obsolete. You know, we have a saying in our society. We say to somebody, when something is flexible, we say, well, it's not written in stone. Well, let me tell you something. The Ten Commandments were written in stone. They were written in stone by the finger of God, and so they are not flexible in that way. They tell us exactly what is required of us, what God has required of man. We're going to be talking about that subject next Tuesday with Dr. Albert Moeller. And then on Thursday's broadcast next week, William Farley will be with me. He's got a great book out called Gospel-Powered Parenting. There are a lot of parenting books out there. Of course, this is one of the, if you go into a Christian bookstore, the shelf is just loaded. It's weighted down with parenting books. So you've got to look for the ones that are really good, that are really gospel-centered. This is one of those books, along with the Instructing a Child's Heart, Ted Tripp's book that I had him on recently about. This is really good book on parenting, and we'll be talking about that on Thursday's broadcast. So now, both of those two items are listed out on the knowingthetruth.org website. Let's go back to our discussion with Hunter Baker. Hunter, just before the break, I had kind of set up a little bit that the secularists are using religious capital. They're using religious language and ideas in some of their arguments. Would you flesh that out a little bit, please?
Well, yeah, there's no question that is true. A great example of it is, I suspect your listeners have heard of a man named Richard Dawkins.
Yes.
Who wrote the book The God Delusion. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he argues very aggressively that Darwin's theory indicates there is no God. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about that is I've seen where he has written in another place that while he thinks that Darwinism defines all of life for us and shows us what the reality is, which is that there is no God. He then turns around and says, but he is a passionate anti-Darwinian when it comes to politics.
Mm.
And my question for Mr. Dawkins would be, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what?
Yeah.
What? Is it just, are you saying that you, and when he says an anti-Darwinian politics, what I take him to mean is a politics that features things like equality, mercy, helping people. And I suspect that he has no foundation to support that.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we engage in an anti-Darwinian politics? If we really believe that Darwinism defines everything, why don't we just live with integrity and act like that's the case?
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't. He flinches from that. And, of course, this was part of Francis Schaeffer's wonderful apologetic, because he used to point out that, these people who say that there is no truth, that there is no ultimate meaning to anything, that there is no such thing as say, maybe justice, none of them live that way.
Mm-hmm.
None of them really believe that. I tell that to my students. I say, okay, does anybody here not believe in justice? Because if you don't, the next time we have a test, I'll just assign you a grade randomly.
Right.
You can't live
in that world. You're absolutely right.
Of course they would be outraged by that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And it's because they do believe in this thing called justice. And, you know, the values that we have come to kind of embody in the West, particularly things like human liberty and equality and democracy and limited government, these are all things that have developed through the experience of Western civilization, heavily influenced by Christianity and our reflections upon Christ and the Old and the New Testaments. And you can't just get rid of that. You know, it's been said that a Western atheist is still a Christian atheist because they still embody a lot of Christian values. There's an academic, you know, left-wing academic named Richard Rorty, and he just sort of cheerfully admits that that he's a free rider on the values, sort of the Christian values of the West. And you know, the problem is, of course, is like I say, it's the cut flower civilization. It looks pretty for a while, but you don't know where that civilization is going once it's out of touch with its sources.
And that, of course, all goes back to them saying that they are neutral, they being the secularist, saying that they are neutral. But if they really think that through, and in keeping with your methodology of approaching them and skeptically asking questions about what they believe, will expose this.
Yes.
But as we do that, we see that it's built, it's a house of cards. It's not sustainable what they're trying to put forth here, that, you know, if they're going to really accept people's view as being valid, if they're really going to be tolerant of other views, you can't live in a world like that where each one is said to be equally valid because they are inherently contradictory. And so it just can't be done. In fact, Barack Obama was actually on the radio program with me, and I had asked him about abortion. And, you know, he had this party line that one abortion was one too many and these types of things. And I wish I would have asked him this question. I wish I would have asked him why he was interested in stopping abortion. That if he doesn't see this as a child, if he sees it as mere tissue, as mere a procedure like having a gallbladder removed or something, you know, why would he then be interested in making a statement like one is too many? I mean, is there any moral value to too many gallbladder operations? Of course not. You know, so why would one be too many unless you see the inherent right of the child to have life, which of course he skirts around. So in that case, you know, like with abortion as well as with many, many other topics, we see that the secularist is extremely inconsistent in their view, and that's what you're trying to expose, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you know, in my mind, when he says something like one abortion is too many, he is essentially placating you as the talk show host. You know, that he is trying to take advantage of your goodwill and politeness, not to
push it further, which I should have done.
Exactly. But you know, I mean, your civility in that situation is probably better than the congressman who yelled out, "You lie." So
yeah, exactly. And I just did a program on civility just recently, so I couldn't do that. But there is something coming across the wire right now about Barack Obama. I should let people know. I'm not sure if this is a rumor or not, but it says that he had watched a college football game this past weekend, and now he's been awarded the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, so, exactly. Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
you know, my mentor in graduate school is a gentleman. You may have had him on the show at some point, Francis Beckwith.
I haven't yet, but I did talk about his book, I think, that he contributed to with Greg Kochel on
Relativism,
Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. It's a great title, yeah.
Well, you know, he is a very prominent philosopher and particularly very good on bioethics type issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had a little note on the web about Obama shows potential, wins Nobel Prize. Fetus shows potential, not so lucky.
Oh, boy. Wow. Yeah, that says it all, doesn't it? They gave that away, of course, based upon what they hope that he will do, not the actual accomplishment. That's
right.
Whole other story, but I guess it was actually voted on about 12 days into the administration. So,
right.
I mean, we can just see the political aspect of it there for sure. Let's run to the phone lines very quickly. We got Don from Pittsburgh on the line. Don, welcome in today.
Yes, thanks, Kevin. You mentioned the president, and it's very interesting to me that this whole contradictory aspect of pluralism. He says on the one hand, in that interview with Rick Warren that he had before he was in the White House, marriage is between a man and a woman. And then this past Saturday night, he says, well, I hope for the day that people will look back upon this administration where they'll start to believe that a union between a man and a man or a woman and a woman is just as real and just as admirable as a man and a woman.
Unreal.
You know, yeah, it is unreal.
Yeah.
And then also there was an article in USA Today recently about bemoaning the fact that there are people in sports who are Christians and who let people know that by praying after they score a touchdown or whatever. And,
right.
and you know, I admit that people, you know, sometimes can put that on for show, but people can really mean that, too. And the writer of the article was, oh, we can't have this, we can't have people believing and expressing that Christianity is the only way and everything like that.
Yeah.
And yet they say, oh, yeah, well, we're pluralistic. We want all ideas, but apparently they don't want all ideas, or
no.
Christianity would have its say, too.
Exactly. All ideas except for this one. Everything else is valid. Everything else is worthy of articulation and publication. But this particular view, because it refuses to say that all ideas are equally valid in the sense of what they're making, that they're, you know, equally right.
Mm-hmm.
And because we refuse to say that, then we're judged as being intolerant, which, of course, is, how can somebody who is tolerant possibly judge anybody of being intolerant? You, by the very nature of it, you wouldn't be able to do it. But they don't seem to see that inconsistency. And, you know, I think Hunter's book here is a very good book to expose that and say, you know, you guys are being very intellectually dishonest here. You're not, sticking with the thesis is of secularism. And therefore, why should we listen to that any more than listening to any other one that's out there?
Well, that's right. And, they quote Matthew 7:1 all the time. Judge not, unless you be judged from the Bible, which they don't like.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, good points, Don. Really.
You know, I want to respond real quick to this caller.
Please do.
One thing that he said that I think is right on is he talked about how the president said one thing campaigning at Rick Warren's church regarding marriage, and now that he's safely in office, is saying something entirely different. One of the figures that I talk about, I give kind of a history of Christianity in the West and of secularization. And one of the people I talk about is Machiavelli.
Mm.
And Machiavelli is a very big disconnect from the influence of Christianity in the West, because he does not give his advice to the prince based on what is right or wrong. He gives his advice to the prince based on what works. Based on effectiveness, based on winning. And so Machiavelli says, you know, don't worry about deceiving people, because there, you know, ordinary people are always willing to be deceived. And by the way, the world is full of ordinary people.
Oh, boy.
So his advice would be, you know, if you're sitting there in the church with Rick Warren, go ahead and say what they want to hear.
Yeah.
And you know what? They won't remember it the next time you lie to them.
And these are so carefully crafted statements that they have that built-in wiggle room to completely change it afterwards. In fact, I've noticed something in a lot of the more effective politicians. I'm not saying the more honest ones. I'm saying the more effective ones, that they actually will stand up and talk about and be, you know, talk in general terms against something that they are actually involved in doing. And
right.
So they'll make some sort of a a broad-based opposition to it when they're actually doing the very thing that they're talking about, only doing it in a way that it's much more hidden. I just noticed that that's a technique that was is used very often among the politicians.
Well, there are all kinds of mental reservations. For instance, you know, if the caller is correct and what he said at Rick Warren's church was marriage is between a man and a woman, he could say that in a truthful way if he's thinking to himself, yes, right now marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm simply stating a fact that right now marriage is between a man and a woman.
Yeah, right.
But my desire is that it be different.
Mm-hmm.
But he just doesn't say the second part.
Exactly, and which is obviously being disingenuous, and he knows that he's being deceptive in those types of statements. When we come back, I want to get you, Hunter, in our last few minutes of the broadcast to articulate a little bit about what you write in the book about Christians being bristling against the idea of the separation of church and state and what they are really bristling at but probably don't realize. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. 1-888-660-WLFJ, kevin@knowingthetruth.org. We've got some books to give away. You've got a couple minutes left to call in and comment during our broadcast today. Talk to you soon.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
A 747 gracefully defies gravity as its 400-plus tons ascends into the air. It's not that the pull of gravity just disappears. It's simply that the lift beneath the wings is greater than the pull of gravity below. That's the picture of life and how our station can help. We can't make the weight of the world disappear for you.
But the message in our programs can help provide the lift you need to help you make it through.
So thanks for your support as we help people focus on the one who can lift people up to soar on eagle's wings.
Tell your friends about Christian Talk 660.
Do you need revival? And what exactly does that mean?
I thought I was doing pretty good. A nice house, good kids, respect. So when the church planned some revival meetings, well, I wasn't interested.
Revival happens when God calls his people back to himself.
God got my attention and showed me how proud and rebellious and ungrateful I'd been. I finally realized how much I needed him. And I asked him to forgive me.
Maybe you feel like you have everything together. But deep down, you know that there are some things keeping you from a full relationship with the Lord. You don't have to wait for a revival service at your church. You can ask for forgiveness and turn from your sin right now. Join me in praying with the psalmist. Will you not revive us again, that your people may rejoice in you? With Seeking Him, I'm Nancy Lee DeMoss.
In 1985, while polio was paralyzing 1,000 children a day, Rotary International committed to a goal of ending polio worldwide. Very soon now, after immunizing over 2 billion children, the goal will be achieved. Eradicating polio worldwide, that is humanity in motion. That is Rotary.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, we're in the last segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast today. That means you only have a couple of minutes to participate in the program if you'd like. I do have some books still to give away here in the studio. Don's got one coming his way, but if you'd like a copy of one of these books, The End of Secularism, written by Dr. Hunter Baker, I do have some more copies to give away that we can mail out to you. It's published by Crossway, by the way, www.crossway.org, and so they put out a lot of excellent books there, and I highly recommend this one as well. A couple ways to be involved, 1-888-660-WLFJ, that's 1-888-660-9535, that's the toll-free number, kevin@knowingthetruth.org, and also Twitter is up and running as well, and so that Twitter account is Knowing the Truth. Hunter, I have a question for you here, and this comes directly out of the Washington Times statement or the article that was written, one of the statements in that article. It says this, just as my screen begins to reload here and does away with what I had highlighted, and let me go back down to it. But it talks about the idea of the separation of church and state. It says, what Mr. Baker does not do in the end of secularism, however, is engage in appeals to a Christian nation that rejects church-state separation out of hand. Quote, and quoting you now, I believe, they say, though Christians often bemoan the separation of church and state and claim angrily that the separation of church and state is not in the Constitution, unquote, he writes, quote, they are actually expressing their frustration with secularism as a preferred ideology of many elites in politics, media, and the education. Tell us a little bit about or articulate for us in a summary form, if you could, the idea of true separation of church and state, how the Christians should think about that, and how we are actually bristling against what secularism is saying, not necessarily that concept.
That's right. Yeah. The separation of church and state, you know, a lot of times we talk about that, we complain about it. It's the basis the Supreme Court often uses to kind of do things we disagree with. But the reality is the separation of church and state is more or less a Christian idea. I would argue, in fact, that the reason the Christian church ended up being united with the state was actually because of the disaster of the fall of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire fell, and the Christian church did not. And so the Christian church was basically the most stable institution left in Europe at that time. And so ended up taking up a lot of political power. I think that Martin Luther is a guy who deserves a lot of credit for having a correct interpretation of this, of separation of church and state. And his idea is, you know, look, the church should not be coercing people to believe. Souls should not be ruled by steel. But what the church should do is to constantly seek to persuade people, to constantly reach out to people. And not only that, the church should call the state to righteousness. The church should insist that the state is accountable, not to the church, but that the state is accountable to God.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church should constantly be calling the state to righteousness. I've heard R.C. Sproul say exactly the same thing. The church calls the state to righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's a correct interpretation. The church doesn't say, well, you know, we need to stay private. We need to main, you know, kind of confine things to the church building. No, the church has a very active role in the society, but it's not a situation where the church receives its sustenance from the state,
mm-hmm.
where the church receives tax dollars. That's a disaster. We've seen what happened with the church in Sweden. The church in Sweden is basically neutered because of decades of kind of drinking at the state's bowl. The church has got to be independent. Separation of church and state is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Secularism goes too far because what it would say is that it's fine to have the church, but don't expect to have any influence on the life of the community.
Not a separation of church and state, but a separation from anything religious, right?
Yeah, it's an amputation of church from the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a friendly separation. It's not a working relationship. It's that there's no relationship. The state is reality and the church is not.
And, of course, Christians then should be articulating what the Christian view is, standing up and being counted, you know, understanding what the argument is in the public square, putting forth a Christian worldview, trying to persuade people. We also vote. There's an organized revolution every 4 years in this country.
That's
and
right.
So, obviously, in our particular situation here in America, we still have the right to vote. And so we can vote the rascals in and out, or those that hold to a particular viewpoint that we feel is valid and best articulates the Christian worldview. Is that correct?
Well, that's exactly right. We don't need to have any fancy rules that sort of argue that people shouldn't talk about religion in public. You know, many academics try to propose those rules. We don't need that at all. The limit is already there. you bring to the public square what you have, and you either can persuade people or you cannot. There's no reason to say that, well, you don't talk about religion. Go ahead and talk about it. Insist on talking about it. Just make sure you do a good job of formulating your arguments.
Well, Hunter, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program today. And thank you even more for writing this book. I hope that it helps Christians to really think through this subject so that we approach these things in a very biblical and with formulated Christian worldview. Thank you very much. Next week, Dr. Albert Moeller. See you then.
To Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660. WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.